Overpass. Turner wants Lemon Davis. Tight to the net. Point's going to be Kansas. The Jayhawks are moving on to the second round.
And the KU Jayhawk volleyball team winning last night in a straight set sweep of Omaha and Lawrence. They move on to second round, take on Penn State, which won it four sets over Yale. And they will play tonight, 5:30, right there in Lawrence. You can watch on ESPN Plus. Also, Nebraska opens play, a first round match. They are number one overall seed and a favorite to make it to the Final Four in volleyball and could very well face Wisconsin for third time. Wisconsin-Nebraska played twice. They've split their first two meetings. Both are one seeds in the NCAA volleyball tournament, and Nebraska will play tonight in Lincoln at 7 o'clock. Welcome to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. And we now are officially underway for winter sports season, Dusty. There was winter sports yesterday.
Yes, the Beloit wrestling team opened out their season last night. They split a double duel with Plainville. They won 36-35 over Plainville, and they split the double duel with Phillipsburg, who beat them 42-17. So Phillipsburg is the number two team in the state in 3-2-1A rankings here to start the season in high school wrestling. So it was a tough battle there in the duel, but Beloit does go 1-1 at the duel there last night in Plainville, the double duel. Next up for the Trojans, they'll have a JV meet at Salina South coming up on Saturday. As far as our other wrestling teams in the area, Osborne will open out the season tomorrow, boys and girls at Hoxie. At that tournament, 9 o'clock, and then 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, the Smith Center girls and boys will open their seasons at the Christmas City Classic in Waukini. So that's what's going on here this weekend for wrestling. As far as that's concerned, you can find the full schedules for all the teams at ncksports.com for all the high school wrestling here in the area, and also high school basketball as well. There were basketball games last night there. Central swept Republic County. Otis Bison swept Natoma for some of the area league schools that are playing. You can find all those scores, again, ncksports.com. So we're going to get going with high school basketball tonight with pretty much the majority of the area teams. Thunder Ridge, the only team from the immediate area that's not opening their season tonight, as they will have to wait until next week at the preseason tournament. So, again, we have a lot of area teams playing tonight, and we'll go through the schedule first, and then we'll preview Beloit Concordia on Katy Country 94 in Beloit here this evening. The Beloit Trojans and Concordia Panthers in Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com, ncksports.com with the Beloit Trojan channel as well. You can catch the games there, and we'll have pregame coverage at 5:50 and tip-off at 6 for the girls' boys to follow. The other games tonight in the immediate area, in the Northern Plains League, Lakeside is hosting Tescott. Osborne welcomes in Russell in a non-league game. Rock Hills is at Pike Valley tonight in league contest. St. John's Tipton travels to Natoma, who started the season last night, both girls and boys losing to Otis Bison, as I mentioned. Southern Cloud is at Stockton tonight. Lincoln hosting Little River. Sylvan Lucas at Bennington. And in the Mid-Continent League, Smith Center is at Plainville. So let's look at what's going on here tonight as far as the immediate area is concerned. Again, all the rest of the North Central Activities Association, Northern Plains League games at ncksports.com. You can find that full schedule. Again, Beloit Concordia tonight. We have the doubleheader on Katy Country 94. And we'll go online video stream, the Beloit Trojan channel at ncksports.com as well. We always have this rivalry matchup to start the season between Beloit and Concordia. The Lady Trojans, Beloit, are coming in off of a 4-17 year, but they have all basically their eight top scorers back, and Addie Budke's back after averaging nearly a double-double as a freshman after not playing as a sophomore. So Peyton Remus and Ashlyn Knight, Cassandra Thompson, Olivia Wright all had good years last year as far as production for Beloit, so they're all back. Marley Files done some good things and worked her way into a bigger role this year as well. So looking forward to seeing what Beloit has. And Concordia has three returning starters coming back. Charlize Cash, Carly Cargren, and Taylor McDaniel were all league selections for Concordia. Beloit coach Shauna Remus discussed what she expects to see in tonight's matchup.
They were similar to us in terms of just very young and inexperienced last year. And so, you know, we know they're hungry as well. And they're coming in. They got some athletes, and so we're going to have to guard hard and take control of the ball. And then, obviously, you know, scoring obviously was a difficult spot for us last year. And so we need to find some consistency on the offensive end.
Beloit won a very low-scoring game last year against Concordia, 36-29. In fact, Beloit's actually won 10 of the last 13 in this series. So girls' game will start tonight. You know, pregame coverage at 5:50, tip-off at 6 o'clock for that girls' contest here this evening. So looking forward to seeing what the Beloit Lady Trojans will bring to the table here with a very experienced group here in 2023-24.
Should be much improved from last year, clearly, and more experience for some of those players that didn't play a lot prior to last year. And then having Addie Budge helps with more size in the paint, and you got a leader in Peyton Remus back at point guard, and they do have some size, there's no doubt about that as well, and they've got some probably a little bit more depth than they've had the last few years off the bench. So yeah, looks like Beloit could have a good year, and we'll see what Concordia does. And then you got the boys game after that.
Yeah, the Beloit boys coming in off of a 17-6 year last year. Concordia went 10-11. Concordia did lose three seniors. They have three returning starters, though. Joey Henderson, Peyton Redder, and Jonathan Turner. Beloit has the four returning starters back after last season. They do lose their senior point guard all-leaguer Wyatt Brockelman, but they have all the other starters returning. Bryce Beisner had an outstanding year last year. Quinn Eilers back, Noah Gerstner back to move into a point guard position, and then Eli Johnson back as a starter. So they've got experience. They've got size. And a team that has very lofty goals this year of hopefully winning a North Central Activities Association championship and making a state tournament appearance. So this matchup here has always been an interesting one. Concordia's actually won six of the last eight here. Beloit in tonight's matchup against Concordia, Ryan Eilert with his thoughts on the matchup.
It's going to be a battle. The last 2 years have kind of been the almost the exact same game, to where we get a lead early and then they fight back and take a lead in the third quarter, and then it comes down to the wire, and they've got us the last couple of years. And they've got three guards that are really good, that can shoot it, can get into the lane. And then they've got a 6'7 kid inside that can handle the paint. And so they've got that good inside-outside as well.
So Beloit, again, coming into tonight's matchup against Concordia. We'll follow the girls' game around 7:30 tip tonight on Katy Country 94 and NCKSSports.com with the Beloit Trojan Channel. See more of Jackson Cheney in the starting lineup here this year, and others that will step up, Brody Litton. Emil, I believe it's Lichen?
My kid goes to school there. He's worked out with Emil during the off season, and the football coaches can't tell me how to pronounce it. My own son can't tell me how to pronounce it. He just goes by Emil. I said, well, you know, so why don't we just say Noah? And then nobody knows. There's lots of Noahs. Mm-hmm. I guess there's not a lot of Emils. But so whatever you officially get, then I'll use, and then if it's wrong, I'll blame you and Ryan and whoever else.
The text said a long E and a slurred CH. I'm like, well, I don't know how.
Leechin?
Like a slurred CH makes Leechin. Me think it's like Leechin.
Leechin?
Yeah, I don't
Leechin?
Know. But
I don't know.
Well, I'm going to ask Emil probably tonight. And just,
that would be a good idea. I asked my son now. I'm like, why can't you ask the guy you worked out with him? Can't you ask him how to pronounce his last name, for crying out loud? He just goes by Emil. That's not good enough for the radio.
I did have a girl when I was in college, because we had a bunch of players from Yugoslavia on the women's basketball team, right? Mm-hmm. So I was always, I asked, you know, they have first and last names that are both difficult to pronounce. Mm-hmm. And so Kovacevic was the last name, and her first name was, I think, Budimka or mm-hmm. something. Like, she's like, just call me Buba. Yeah. And so I was like, well, I guess college-wise, people are going to know these people by the end of the season. I'll just call her Buba.
Yeah.
But it was like, it's like, just call me Emil. And I'm like, okay, well, that works for your buddies, but...
Right.
But he's obviously going to provide some depth in the inside at 6'5 as well. And Brody 6'6, Bryce 6'5, Eli 6'3. I mean, they've got size.
Bryce is better, more at 6'5. Probably. Yeah. They might list him at 6'5.
Yeah.
6'5.
He's probably 6'7, 6'8 close.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But I'd say 6. I'd say he's definitely 6. I mean, he's taller than – when I saw at practice that one day, he looked taller than Emil. And Emil's 6'5. He's 6'6. Bryce has always been 6'6 for the last couple of years. So 6'6, 6'7, that's probably where he's at, although – you know, it is interesting year in and year out rosters. Kids shrink. Like, I keep the roster from the previous year, and a kid lost 2 inches in height.
Some girls will go from 5'9 to 5'7, and it's like, what happened?
Yeah, what happened? Well, somebody hit them over the head with a hammer? You know, 6 foot to 5'10. I thought, and then the next year, they're 6'1. Whoa, what? I didn't know that happens. But yeah, the point is, Beloit's got a lot of size.
Size, yeah.
And size is good, But the problem can be if they run into teams that can really shoot the three, how are they going to match up on the perimeter? Because you can't sit in zone, because three-point shooters love zone. Trust me, I know. That was my only thing I could do in school, playing basketball, was shoot threes. My eyes lit up like a kid in a candy store when I saw zone defense. Like, are you seriously going to be dumb enough to play zone against me? That's fine. I'll light you up. And that was awesome. Then it went man-to-man. I'm like, okay, now I need people to help screen and get me open, because I wasn't that super fast. So, you know, you can't sit in zones usually against teams that really shoot the three well. So then you got to play man, or maybe you play a little triangle and two, a box and one, depending on how many good shooters there are. But that's going to be the challenge for Beloit, is can they defend the 3-point line with the size that they have? And Concordia has kids that can shoot it. The Henderson kid's very good. They do have size inside. Although he really was an offensive threat last year, the kid for Concordia, but he maybe has improved. So that can neutralize a few things inside for Beloit. And then Beloit's got a new point guard, as we talked about, with Wyatt Brockman. He only lose one starter from last year, one key part of the rotation, but he was a two-time All-Leaguer, and he was their point guard the last 2 years. So there's going to be an adjustment period there, and then somebody's got to slide into the two-guard spot, whether Beloit goes big and Quinn plays the two, and then you got three big guys at 3-4-5, or if Quinn plays the three, and then Jackson Cheney or someone that can step in at the two spot. You know, in a picture perfect world, based on the size and the strengths of the players, you would have Jackson at the two, and then, well, in a perfect situation, you'd have Wyatt back another year.
Yeah,
that would be probably. But because my son's played two guard most of
his
career,
get a COVID year for
Wyatt.
Yeah,
right. Let's work on that. Right, get a seventh year of eligibility like they do for some of these guys in college football. But ideally, you would probably have a little bit more versatility, perhaps, if you can have, you know, you've got Quinn at the three, and then you got Eli at a four and Bryce at the five, and then you got Size coming off the bench, and then you got Jackson that could step in and be the two. Jackson's a pretty good shooter and he's a very good passer, and then you could have my son at the point guard, and who knows, maybe you'll end up having, you know, when you face full court pressure, it doesn't mean a point guard's got to bring it up all the time. Nowadays you're seeing five men and four men handle the ball well, and that helps break pressure pretty easily. And if you can do that, then, you know, Bryce can handle the basketball and alleviate a little bit of pressure if they see a full court press. So I think the biggest question for Beloit is going to be who's going to step in and be the two guard, or are they going to go really big and Quinn plays a two, or are they going to go more, you know, traditional and have a regular two guard that's maybe, you know, not as big but still a good shooter, and then have, you know, that tweener that is Quinn, I think, at the three, and then you have your two bigs at four and five with bench help. But they can kill teams inside. There's no doubt about that. And if you collapse, then the question is going to be who's going to hit the outside shot. And there's no doubt that my son can hit the outside shot. There's no doubt that Jackson's capable of doing it. And Quinn has certainly hit some threes in his career. Last year, Quinn and Noah struggled early in the year, and then they started to figure it out why it struggled early in the year. Mm-hmm. Boyd shot the ball poorly from three early last year.
Yeah.
And then they really picked it up, and their percentages at the end of the year were actually pretty good considering how bad they shot at the first couple games. So, and that cost them against Concordia last year. They were winning, then they couldn't buy a bucket, and they packed it in on Bryce. And I've heard somebody – I had somebody one time tell me, like, they should just throw it in the Beisner every single time. Well, no kidding. You know, they should throw it in the Hunter Dickinson every single time. But if there are three guys around him, do you think he's open? Probably not. So then you have to what?
Shots.
Well, the inside game opens up the outside game. That's true. Conversely, the outside game opens up the inside game. So if teams are going to play you super tight on the perimeter, then guess what? Guess what? That opens up things for the big guy inside.
Yes.
If they're going to be collapsing and doubling down on Bryce all night long, guess who that opens things up for? The guards. So both sides are correct. When you say, if you're a parent of a big man, we got to go inside out. Well, that's true sometimes. That's true. And if you say, well, I'm a parent of a guard, you got to be outside, and that sets up inside. And you know what? Sometimes that's true. It isn't all just one thing. It isn't, we have to throw the ball in the post every single time. No, you don't. You don't have to take every single wide open shot when you're wide open on a three either. It's a combination. If you work it inside, work the ball around, get a wide open three on the third or fourth pass instead of just coming down and chucking it. Now, transition's a great time to hit that three. Transition, when people aren't defending you. But it's a combination, you know, and if they're going to play front and play behind Bryce, guess what? There's probably not going to be as many opportunities for him to score, but if you can get it into him somehow, then he maybe can make that kick out pass, or somebody cut to the bucket opens up everything. Conversely, if teams are going to play it tight on the perimeter, now all of a sudden Bryce has one-on-one. So if the guys are hot from the outside, that helps set up your big guy inside or big guys. And that doesn't just apply to Beloit. It applies to any single high school, college team.
It's got to be a full operation.
Absolutely. It applies to pro, too. And so, you know, when Beloit plays teams that are smaller than them, it's going to be tough for teams to beat Beloit unless they're hitting the three-point shot. But if Beloit runs into a team where they're a whole bunch, they got four out, one in, and they can really shoot the three, that's going to be the toughest matchup for Beloit this year. And if they face another team that has a lot of size, I think Beloit will be like, hey, that's fine. We can deal with that because then we don't have to worry about as many three-point shooters on the perimeter. So I think that's the one big question for Beloit and the boys because they've got the makings to have a really good year. They've got the makings to make it to state. They got the makings to make a run at state. If they can stay healthy, which they've already battled some injuries off of the football season, if they can stay healthy and find that starting lineup they like, whether it's traditional lineup or if they're going to have Quinn at the two and go really, really big. And then the biggest question, of course, that I just mentioned is, can they guard the perimeter against – you can't sit in zone against teams that can light you up from three. More than likely, you can't. So you're going to have to do something else. Teams don't shoot it very well, okay, now you can play some zone. Mm-hmm. You know, Beloit's played a lot of zone the last few years. That's just kind of how their makeup is. But they can play man-to-man, but they haven't played a ton of it. And we've seen a lot of triangle and two, box and ones from Coach Eilert. So it'd be really interesting tonight because Concordia is a good basketball team. They got talent coming back. The Henderson kid's really, really good. And so it'll be a good game tonight. The last 2 years have come down to the wire, and both times Beloit had a nice lead. 2 years ago, I think they ran out of gas. They only had a few practices. There's some of their football players playing basketball, and they ran out of gas. Concordia had a whole bunch of time to practice. And then last year, like I said, Beloit was rolling first half, and the second half, they packed it in, and Beloit just didn't make the outside shot by any of their three guards.
Yeah.
So.
It sounds like from everything, and I've done the research too, obviously. I saw Beloit a few times last year, so I know the team, It does. It sounds like it's going to come down to the perimeter on both ends of the floor, right? Like defense, guarding the three, and you're going to have to knock some down because the defense is going to pack it in if you don't.
Like, I mean, Concordia does have a 6'7 guy that maybe can to where they don't have to double as much.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of teams are going to have to double Bryce. If they don't double Bryce, I think Bryce is going to – you don't double Bryce – and Beloit's smart enough to get the ball inside. It's one-on-one. Listen, I agree with this person. If Bryce is guarded one-on-one and Beloit's chucking threes and not throwing the ball inside, then, yeah, that's not very bright. If it's one-on-one with Bryce, he's going to go for 20 a night.
I was just – when you were talking about all that, I was thinking if they defend Bryce like Oklahoma did Aoka Lee that 1 year,
he'll have a
ball
career
every time. Yeah. Maybe he can get 61.
Yeah. The one thing about Beloit, too, is that if they do play man-to-man, even if they get beat – on the perimeter, you do have a fly swatter inside in Beisner. He can block almost four a game last year. So, you know, the best Kansas teams had a fly swatter.
Oh, absolutely.
And everybody talked about great Kansas's defense was. You know, honestly, it was good. The perimeter guys were overrated every once in a while but they'd gamble and get steals, and that helped their stats. Well, they knew they could gamble.
They had
a guy that could be, they had Jeff Withey they had Cole Aldrich. They had somebody back there that could, reject shots and then, I'm already cherry picking and here we go on an outlet off a black shot. And Beloit does have that luxury where if you do get beat, as long as you come back and help defense and hustle back, that Bryce can help erase some mistakes for your guards on the perimeter if you get beat off the dribble. So that's one thing Beloit's got going for them if they do play man to man is they do have an eraser inside. So it's going to be interesting.
It's a lost art, right?
It is. You don't see a lot of that.
Even
anymore.
Some of the taller guys, like Wemby ain't doing that in the NBA. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's not.
No.
He's blocking shots, but it's just because he's in the right spots at the right time. It's not like he's a rim protector.
Yeah, exactly. But you have a rim protector in your defense. Guards aren't getting all the way to the bucket for layups very often.
No.
And so then what do you got to do? You live from the outside. And if you're not a good outsiding shoot team and you get rejected every time you go inside, well, then, it's going to be a long night for you.
Absolutely.
For sure, no doubt. All right, looking forward to it. We just have Beloit Concordia tonight on KD Country 94 with pregame about 5:50 tonight with the girls' game, then the boys' game. There's a couple of fundraising events taking place as well, including a fundraiser for Kirsten Jones and her battle with cancer, stage 4 cancer. She's battling it, doing well against it from what I see in the updates. There's a big fundraiser for her tonight, so make sure you get out there to the Commons. Starts at 5 o'clock and get there and support her and her family. She has been the assistant basketball coach for Coach Remus on the women's staff, and she is highly respected and highly liked. And I've been able to coach her kids in sports, and I've worked with her husband in coaching youth baseball and so forth and so on. And she's a great person. So if you can come out and support her, that would be great tonight there, starting at 5 o'clock, or get there later. You can support there with the, I believe it's a soup supper they're having for her, and all the proceeds there will go to her Kirsten and her battle against stage 4 cancer. So love for you to come out and support that tonight if you can. Normally we'd have games on both our stations. We don't tonight because we have KU basketball against UConn. We'll talk about that when we return on the Sports Ticket.
We've all had it happen. It's a chilly morning, you need to get to work or get the kids to school, and the car won't start. Great. That's just what you needed this morning, a dead battery. I'm Elijah at Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Don't let that dead battery ruin your day. Stop by. We're happy to test your battery for free while you wait. And if you need a new one, we have AC Delco batteries in stock and on sale. We even install them for free. That's Kiefer Brothers Automotive, just south of the courthouse in Beloit, or online at KieferBrothers.com. AC Delco batteries are on sale now at Kiefer's.
They've got all the pieces. They've got perimeter shooting, even though they haven't shot it great yet from the arc, but they got shooters, size, and they got length, and they got experience and toughness. I mean, they're a complete team. They could win it again this year. I mean, Danny's got a good enough bunch that they could do that. I don't see a lot of glaring type deficiencies.
No, UConn is legitimate, and it's a matchup tonight, a matchup of the last two national champions in men's college basketball, KU a couple years ago, and last year UConn. And if Kansas would have beaten Arkansas, which they should have, and if Bill Self was on the sideline, I think they would have. They would have played UConn in the next round, and I don't think Kansas would have beat UConn last year. I don't. I think it would have been done right then and there in the Sweet 16. But it didn't happen. UConn blew out Arkansas. Basically blew out everybody,
yeah,
and went on to win the national championship. Never was fully challenged. They're very talented. They lost three key players from last year's team. Kansas has been struggling offensively outside of McCullough and Dickinson. This can be a great matchup tonight. I saw a stat. I'm going to have to pull it up here because I don't remember it, but I'm going to go back. By the way, I've been let out of jail on Facebook, so I feel good about that.
Awesome.
Yeah. We'll see how long that lasts. Where is it at here? There we go. Tonight will mark the 26th time that KU has hosted a top 10 opponent in the Bill Self era. It'll be the 13th time that Kansas hasn't been the higher ranked team.
Man,
do you know what Kansas's record in the 12 games where they have been the lower ranked team at home under Bill Self against a top 10 opponent? So we're talking Kansas playing a top 10 opponent. Kansas is rated lower than the team they are hosting. There have been 12 instances of this. What do you think KU's record is at home in those situations?
Here's the thing. They always talk about...
Actually, I don't even think this is a home thing. I think it's just overall.
Okay. They always. I was going to say, if it was a home thing, they always talk about how Bill Self has more conference championships than home losses.
You know, actually, I think it thing. Is. I think it is a home.
So,
it is a home
obviously, thing. It's going to be heavily in favor of KU. I'm going to say 11-1.
12-0.
They're 12-0. Yeah, I was just gonna,
perfect.
I was going to say 12-0, but I figured I'd leave just one spot leeway.
Perfect. They're perfect, 12-0. But 13's an unlucky number, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, listen, I think Kansas loses tonight. That's just me. I've got friends telling me, dude, they overlooked Eastern Illinois. They'll just blow the doors off UConn. Listen, I've seen UConn play.
I don't think they're going to do that. They might beat UConn. They're not going to blow the doors.
Yeah, they very well could beat UConn. I'm not going to. Why would I sit here and say they can't beat UConn
exactly.
at home? Of course they can. They're ranked fifth, and UConn's ranked fourth. But I have DeJuan Harris is going to have to play extremely well tonight for them to win. And he can. He has proven before that he can step up in big moments. There's no doubt about it. But DeJuan Harris cannot shoot four times and get 1 point tonight. I don't think there's any scenario where they win with him scoring 1 point. He's going to have to score. Last year they talked about, what was their record? It was amazing when he scored, what was it, seven or more or something small. KJ Adams has to play really well. Harris has to play well. Dickens has to keep doing what he's been doing. McCullough's got to keep doing what they're doing. And so all four of their top four players have to play extremely well tonight. Are they capable of doing it? Absolutely. Now, how's El Malco Jackson going to play, the freshman in the starting five? Mm-hmm. How's Johnny Furphy going to pay off the bench? What's Nicholas Timberlake going to finally hit some shots off the bench to transfer to Towson? You know, is Jamari McDowell going to be able to do anything off the bench? Can Parker Brown give him some good minutes? And how many minutes is Bill Self really going to use from his bench? If he doesn't really trust it now, I think DeJuan Harris is going to play 38 minutes tonight. or 40.
Yeah.
And I think Hunter Dickinson's going to play 35 plus. I don't think
barring
Bill,
foul trouble and
right,
all that, right?
Right. I think Bill,
they're at Allen Fieldhouse, so there's not probably going to be that.
I think Bill's going to ride his starters tonight. I think he obviously wants to win this badly. He knows it. I think deep down he knows if he was on the sideline last year instead of Norm Roberts, they would have made a few obvious changes that Norm kind of messed up on, and they would have more than likely won and would have played UConn in Sweet 16. So I think Connecticut's going to win tonight. And I could be dead wrong, and it sounds crazy to pick against Kansas when they're at home. But UConn is very athletic at almost every spot. I don't know how athletic Kansas is. I really am a little bit curious about that. And we saw Harris struggle against a really good point guard Marquette at the Maui Invitational. KU got rolled by 14. And they really weren't in it most of the second half. So, but it is at Allen Fieldhouse. The place is going to be rocking. And so that is the wild card, the X factor. And I do expect Harris to bring his A game. I expect KU to elevate their game compared to what they did early in the week against Eastern Illinois. I do not see a scenario where KU blows them out. I would be very surprised if KU blows them out. I don't think either team blows out either one. But I do think that Connecticut's going to find a way to win this game. Now, they've never been in this place like Allen Fieldhouse, so maybe they'll be caught in awe and be down 20-6 early on. But UConn is explosive. They're good offensively. Even if they get down double digits, they can come back. Kansas, I think, has less room for error than UConn does in this game tonight, and thus is why I'm picking UConn. If Hunter Dickinson gets in foul trouble, or Kevin McCullough gets in foul trouble, and Kansas can be challenged, with their defense can be challenged tonight by UConn. They're going to drive it. They can swing it. They can pass it. They can shoot it. They've got a big inside at 7 foot, Klingon, or whatever his name is, that can play against Dickinson, so that might neutralize Dickinson. So if Dickinson tonight, instead of getting 25-13, gets 14-12, Kansas in trouble. Because they got to find, I mean, he had 25-13 on the night, and they only scored 71. Mm-hmm. If he only has 15-12, because he'll get double-digit rebounds almost every game. If he only gets 15 tonight, Kansas is in deep trouble unless Harris goes off and scores 15 or more. Or Adams goes crazy for 20. I mean, you can't expect any of these KU guys except Hick Dickinson to go for 30-plus. Nobody in their career has proven that. McCullough's not a guy that can fill it up and score 30 or more. We haven't seen it happen once in his career, I don't believe. Harris, his career high is 23, and that was because he's wide open shooting threes against Kentucky at 5 threes that night. And Adams, you know, he can get some garbage buckets. He can cut to the bucket with Dickinson. If they double Dickinson, Adams could have a big night. I just think Connecticut has different ways to – I think they have more offensive weapons to where they can beat Kansas, and thus I think they're a little bit more complete offensively. And I think Kansas has less room for error, so thus I'm picking UConn. Max will be mad at me, but you know what? That's just my opinion. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. But I have watched both teams play. I will be willing to bet you a lot of KU fans have not seen UConn play one single bounce.
I admittedly have not seen UConn play this year, so when I talk about this game, it's based on what I've seen from Kansas in like three or four games that I've been able to watch, and maybe, you know, two full games for KU. But it does, you know, I always look at the box scores because I have to have all that information anyway. And when you're looking at these things and you're seeing, it's just Dickinson and McCullough every night, night in and night out. There might be another double figure score, but it's like 10 or 11 points, right? It's not like somebody went off for a huge game for the most part this year. So, I mean, if you think about that and you think about a team that's undefeated, they're the defending national champion. They're playing real well, it looks like, just based on scores that they've got. And you know, it's, I don't think UConn's going to be scared to come in anywhere as the defending national champion with an undefeated record, right? You know, they might be in awe a little bit at the beginning. Who knows? I don't know what kids' mentalities are going to be going into a game like this. But it's hard for me as just an outsider looking in at everything that you see on this matchup and think that KU's even going to win, really.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you look at history and see that Harris has done this before, he's had games where he's scored and he can do it. And then you look at other guys that you know can't. KJ Adams can do things, and obviously is going to be expected to do more as the season goes on and you get into conference play, then you hope that happens if you're a KU fan. But there's not a lot right now to tell you that KU should win this game.
Right.
They may win this game, but there's nothing really to tell you that they should win this
game. And you can sit here and you can say, well, they beat Tennessee, and they're a top 10 team, and beat them pretty good the right after coming off the tough loss to Marquette. They beat in Kentucky. They got really good wins. Mm-hmm. And UConn, you know, maybe they just haven't played as tough a schedule as we may think. Kansas play a tougher schedule. I know Kansas will be rocking and rolling, ready to go tonight. I just really highly respect UConn and what they've done. They're very well coached, and I think this will be a great game, and I wish I could watch it, but at the same time, it'll be a high school basketball tonight. But I don't know, for some reason I'm just leaning towards UConn, and that's why I'm picking them. And so you can chastise me Monday when KU wins by 11, but And I'm okay with that. I have no problem with that. I have no problem being wrong. I just, my gut's telling me that UConn, at least looking at the matchup the way it is and watching both teams play, Kansas is going to have either a fantastic defensive performance or somebody's going to have two other guys step up offensively besides McCullough and Dickinson, because I don't think McCullough and Dickinson are going to combine going for 50 tonight. And if they do, then they have a shot.
Hey, give them the dub if they combine for 50 and at least somebody steps up and does something else, you know? I would definitely say KU's going to win that game in that situation. I don't think you can let – I don't think Connecticut's – UConn's going to let two guys go off like that. Mm-hmm. But if they do, I mean, it's like, yeah, I'm definitely going to go in favor of KU if that happens.
The other thing, too, is, you know, Kansas can be off the dribble. We've seen that against Marquette. Mm-hmm. Dickinson's 7'2", but he's not like a prototypical shot blocker. So he's not exactly a rim protector. And a lot of times he gets pulled out anyway. So I don't like the matchup. I just don't. But we'll see what happens. Perhaps we'll be wrong. Paula sent me a way to pronounce the name. If Emil goes by the pronunciation of the actual word, L-E-C-H-I-E-N, then you're going to know how to do it.
There we go.
She says Lichen. It says she's got L-I-E-S-H-E-N. Lichen. Yeah, I don't do the game tonight. Why do I care?
I'm going to figure it out because Ryan said something about a long E, so there was no long
E. I've got
this
here. You can listen to it and see. Maybe that'll help you for that pronunciation tonight. Now watch, Ryan will just sit him on purpose so that you don't have to announce his name. And Emil will be like, dude, what'd I do? The radio guy doesn't know how to pronounce your last name, so we can't play. Sorry, you're eligible, but we just can't play.
Sorry about that, man.
Too bad, man. Radio's bigger than the game. Everybody knows that. Okay, so KU and UConn tip off tonight at 8 o'clock, pregame at 7:30 on Z96.3 Lake. Other games in the Big East, Big 12 battle. Number 6, Houston's at Xavier. Iowa State travels to DePaul. West Virginia hosts St. John's. Josh Eilert from Osborne, of course, the head coach of the West Virginia Mountaineers. Football news. Penn State has hired Andy Kotelnicki as its new offensive coordinator. The Athletic reports Kotelnicki comes from Kansas, where he is one of the chief architects of the KU's incredible turnaround under Lance Leipold. Despite missing preseason Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year Jalen Daniels for much of the season, Kotelnicki generated an attack that ranked 29th in both total and scoring offense this season, which is pretty impressive when you had a backup playing for most of the season and a third stringer playing for a game and a half. The Jayhawks averaged 7 yards per play. That was 8th in the country with second string and third string quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. That helps get you on the map.
Maybe Andy Kotelnicki should have been the Big 12 Coach of the Year.
Maybe. But Kotelnicki is going to be making $1.6 million, supposedly, reportedly. Kansas hasn't officially announced anything yet, but they did promote Jim Jabrowski to co-offensive coordinator. He worked as quarterback's coach for the last 3 seasons and helped mentor Jalen Daniels and Jason Bean. So it's a tough blow for Kansas, but that's the price of success. Listen, K-State went through it many years after Bill Snyder turned things around. We know all what happened with the Oklahoma guys and the Stoop brothers and Venables and everybody else. And once you get good at anything, people are going to come poaching your coaches. I mean, we've seen it with the Chiefs before. We've seen it with the Patriots. We've seen Warriors. Mike Brown got poached. He was an assistant coach for the Warriors for a while. You're going to have coaches that are going to be really attractive to get head coaching opportunities. And this is not a head coaching opportunity, but it is a step up probably financially, a little more visible job there with Penn State. KU fans talking about how it's a parallel job. It's not a parallel job. Penn State's a better football program in Kansas now.
It's also not a parallel job based on dollars either.
No, although I think Kansas could have probably come up with
money. They may have, yeah.
But we'll see how that works out for the University of Kansas. Staying with college football, and this is a sports ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. So it all gets started tonight, which I'll miss that as well. So thanks a lot, Kyle Beisner, for scheduling basketball games on a Friday night. Thank you, athletic directors. I'm sorry. My bad. It ain't about me. It's a Friday night. It's not the AD's fault. It's the Pac-12 having it on a Friday night. And it's KU's KU and fault. UConn playing on Friday night. It's college basketball and college football's fault. It really, truly is. I hate when they put these big things on a Friday night and interfere with high school athletics. But they don't care. It's all about the dollar. But this has been going on for a few years with the Pac-12. So tonight, now the thing is, I am in the stands. So when Dusty's actually on the air doing the game, I can be a parent tonight. And then during commercials, or not commercials, but timeouts, things like that, I can actually check on that Pac-12 title game.
You can
I can watch a little bit of it. And I can watch maybe the last half hour of the KU-UConn game if the referees don't blow 1,000 whistles tonight.
Yeah.
So, and we avoid a whole bunch of overtimes. So Washington, number 3, undefeated, takes on number 5, Oregon. Oregon's a heavy favorite, even though Washington beat Oregon early in the year by 3. Oregon had a field goal to tie it, and they missed it. It was a longer field goal. It's in Las Vegas tonight, 7 o'clock on ABC. I think everybody outside of Washington is picking Oregon to win this game, which scares me a little bit when everybody jumps on a wagon.
Maybe I should be making a change in my pick this morning.
Bo Nix, if he has a really good performance tonight, I think he wraps up the Heisman. But Penix, the quarterback for Washington, is also a Heisman Trophy candidate. So who you picking, Oregon or Washington?
I'll go ahead and stick with Oregon, like I said earlier this week.
Okay. You're going with Oregon?
Yeah.
All right. I'll stick with Oregon as well. I think it's hard to beat a team twice when they're both so equally matched. That's 7 o'clock tonight on ABC. Tomorrow at 11 a.m. is number 7, Texas. They're taking on number 18, Oklahoma State, in Arlington on ABC. And Texas really seems to be in a tough situation based on everything that I'm reading and seeing. And it is interesting how people can kind of skew things to bend to their own argument or agenda. Like, I know Parker sent me something about Oregon has no quality wins. I said, beating number 12 Utah in Utah and beating number 16 Oregon State by 24 last week, who's determining how those are not quality wins?
Yeah.
Like, if you go look at Georgia's schedule, their schedule wasn't exactly super tough this year,
no.
All right? Everybody said that before the season. So why is, well, you know, granted, Oregon has one loss, but if Georgia loses to Alabama, most people say Georgia's probably still in the playoff, maybe even ahead of Oregon. But I could come back with Oregon won their conference championship, avenged only a loss, Georgia had one loss, okay, it's in the conference title game. Now let's go look at quality wins, okay. Everybody sits here and acts like the SEC is always overrated in regards to rankings, so that always helps Georgia and Alabama. Okay, Georgia has a good win over a top 10 team in Missouri. They had a nice win over Ole Miss, so they got two really good wins. If Oregon wins tonight, they'll have wins over number 3, number 12, and number 16. That's pretty damn good to me.
Yeah.
So I don't understand where, like, I think it just depends on what website you go to, how they qualify quality wins. And if you tell me, the Pac-12 is a better conference than the Big 12. There are people trying to make argument Texas has the tougher schedule. They have more quality wins than Oregon. And I'm sitting here trying to think of them. Like, I know Texas beat Alabama and Alabama. But if it doesn't weigh enough to keep Alabama behind Texas, if they beat Georgia, then why is it good enough to put Texas over Oregon if Oregon wins tonight? That's hypocritical. It's contradictory. It doesn't make any sense from that standpoint. I mean, I'll pull up Texas's schedule here in just a second. But I don't think Texas has a great chance of making it. I don't. I think Texas is in the worst situation. And they talk about data points. Okay, so to finish this, number 7, Texas takes on number 18, Oklahoma State, on ABC tomorrow at 11. At 3 o'clock, SEC Championship, number 1, Georgia takes on number 8, Alabama, on CBS in Atlanta. The Big Ten Championship is number 2, Michigan, against number 16, Iowa, at 7 o'clock on Fox. And at the same time, number 4, Florida State battles number 14, Louisville and Charlotte, for the ACC title. Here's the problem for Texas and Florida State, but especially Texas. Okay, Oregon gains a lot by winning because they beat a team ranked higher than them.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama has the most to gain of anybody because they can knock off the number 1 team that has won like 26 games in a row or something like that. They have everything to gain. Alabama has everything to gain. They got the perfect situation if they win. Okay, they're going to gain more street cred than anybody else that wins this weekend if they beat Georgia. There's no question about that. Okay, Michigan, because they're undefeated, it doesn't hurt them, and they're number 2. It doesn't hurt them that they're playing number 16 Iowa because they just beat number 3 Ohio State, okay, or number 2 Ohio State at the time. Florida State's undefeated now with a backup quarterback, but they're going to play a team ranked 10 spots lower than them in 14 Louisville. So they don't have as much to gain based on, okay, well, you beat Louisville, you're supposed to. But Alabama beat number 1 Georgia. Maybe Alabama, with one loss, should be ahead of Florida State, even though they're undefeated, right? Is it the most 4 deserving teams, or it is the 4 best teams right now? Well, if it's 4 best teams right now, then you can just take the losses and throw them out the window. So to me, it's it has to be the 4 best teams overall. And that means the whole resume has to be considered. And you can sit here and you can kick the Alabama loss at home to Texas because our quarterback wasn't playing well and he lost by double digits at home. You can throw that to the side. But if you're going to throw that to the side, then don't we have to throw aside the other one losses for the other teams? Can't we throw away Texas's loss in a rivalry game to Oklahoma by three? You know, why does Alabama going to gain and then we forget that Texas beat them and Alabama jumps Texas? Well, Texas lost to Oklahoma. Yeah, but you ignore the Alabama loss to Texas. That's pretty convenient.
Yeah.
So, you know, the rationale is flawed. It always is. And we usually, instead of looking at all the wins and the quality of wins and strength of schedule, like Parker mentioned, which I agree with Parker, that's the better way of looking at this, is like, who has the better strength of schedule? Who has more quality wins? Who has better wins on the road? To me, that's the thing to look at instead of looking at, because I think this is the lazy way of doing it. And all the analysts do it. And a lot of people do it. We've been guilty of getting sucked in as well. We get all caught up in the loss. Well, who had the worst loss? Well, Oklahoma State lost by 42 to Central Florida. So how are they in ahead of K-State in the Big 12 title game if we end up tying Oklahoma State? Because they beat your butt head-to-head. You just don't throw away a head-to-head because you lost by 42. You lose by one or 1,000, it's just one loss. Okay? So should Alabama be punished if they lost by double digits to Texas and Oregon lost on a, you know, by not hitting a field goal at the end of tie? Probably not. But Alabama lost at home, right?
Yeah.
They lost at home. So, but that was week two. Well, okay. Texas, what's the great wins that Texas has? So this is a thing that I hear, and I've heard recently. Well, Oregon doesn't have quality wins, and Texas has the quality win against Alabama, so Texas should be ahead of Oregon. I completely disagree. Here's why. Tell me what other great win Texas has this year, and I'll wait. I'll wait. I mean, I'll be waiting for a while. Tell me what great team that Texas has beaten other than Alabama. Because if Texas didn't have the win over Alabama, we wouldn't even be thinking about Texas for the playoff. We wouldn't even be thinking about them. And I'll explain that here in a second. So here's what I hear. Oregon doesn't have quality wins. They don't have enough quality wins. But Texas has that big quality win. Yeah, do they have a second one? Here's what Texas has done. You ready? Help me find the great win they have besides the one. Versus Rice, 37-10. At Alabama, 34-24. Clearly, that's the big one, right?
Yes.
One at home against Wyoming, 31-10. One at Baylor, 38-6. Baylor was 3-9. They beat Kansas, 40-14. Kansas was a backup quarterback who didn't know he was going to play until an hour before the game. So they beat a team ranked 24th at the time that is not ranked now. You want to go put all your eggs in the basket? You beat a KU football team to get yourself in the playoff? Good luck with that. You lost to number 12 Oklahoma by 4. You won at Houston by 7. You beat BYU 35-6. You won in overtime against a team that's ranked right now 25th. And K-State was not top 15 when they played him, by the way.
No.
So that's not a gigantic great win. At TCU, barely won.
Almost blew the game,
too. Right. At TCU, blew that game almost. Won 29-26. Beat Iowa State 26-16. And beat a Texas Tech team that's 500, 57-7. This would be their third-ranked win of the year. I guess technically fourth, because you count Kansas. But Kansas was barely in at the time. And a backup quarterback. So if you're going to not give Texas a lot of credit for beating Alabama because their quarterback was struggling week two, why do you give Texas all the credit in the world for beating a backup quarterback when the Jayhawks played?
Yeah.
See, there's no consistency in the argument.
Not at all.
And December 2nd, tomorrow, they play number 18 Oklahoma State, who is 9-3. They have three losses. So that's the thing that hurts.
It'll be their second best win.
Right. So Oklahoma State has three losses. Texas' second best win will be against a team that has three losses. That's assuming Texas wins tomorrow, mm-hmm. right? And Florida State, they're gonna, if they beat Louisville would then have three losses. Okay. Oregon and Alabama have a ton to gain. So when I hear Oregon doesn't have the quality wins, okay. Let's look at Oregon's schedule. Portland State, easy. Texas Tech, beat early in the year. Some people at Texas Tech, top three in the Big 12. Beat Hawaii. Beat, at the time, number 19 Colorado. They lost to number 7 Washington by 3, missed a field goal at the end. They beat Stanford, who's not good, beat Washington State, who is started off great, struggled lately. They beat number 13 Utah in Utah by 29. They beat Cal. They beat USC, who was ranked most of the year. They beat Arizona State, who's bad. And they beat Oregon State. So they've got Oregon State, Utah, and Colorado. So they have 3 top 25 wins. Texas, I guess, has 4. But when you sit here and tell me that they don't have any quality wins, well, guess what? If Oregon beats Washington and Texas beats Oklahoma State, guess who gains? Oregon gains.
Oregon, yeah.
So if it's pretty dead even right now, to me, that's the data point that puts Oregon past Texas. But here's the thing. They're already past Texas in the rankings, and they're playing a better team than Texas is. Washington is better than Oklahoma State. And anybody disagrees with that, then we really need to go watch some football.
Yeah, you don't even need to watch football. You should know that already.
I mean, Oklahoma State lost by 42 to Central Florida. Oklahoma State lost by 26 to South Alabama at home.
Washington's lost to nobody.
To nobody. So Oregon has everything to gain in the world. And so I don't see a scenario where Texas makes the playoff if Oregon wins.
No.
And obviously they don't make it if Washington wins. Now, what would have to happen for Texas to make it? They would need to ride the week 2 win over Alabama to get them in. I mean, that's seriously what we're talking about. You're putting all of your political capital as a Texas Longhorn fan on your win September 9th that a lot of people have kind of forgotten about in some cases, right? The SEC is going to write it off and kick it to the curb like, whatever, that was week 2 and Milroe wasn't playing very well and then Alabama went to another quarterback the week after. And if they played now, who's the better team? Clearly Alabama, because Texas has had a lot of close games where they haven't put teams away. And I'll say to that, Alabama needed a Hail Mary to beat Auburn. So don't sit me and give me that grief either. Okay? So I'll defend Texas from that standpoint. All you're supposed to do is win. You know, last year TCU, well, they won't have a chance in the playoff. They beat Michigan. They beat everybody they played except K-State. They earned their right to be in the game. Well, they have a lot of close wins. Oh, dear God. You don't have to beat everybody by 1,000. You don't. Texas simply has beaten everybody on their schedule, so I give them credit for that. But if you sit here, and I watch Texas play, and I watch Oregon play, and I think Oregon's better. That's the eye test. I watch Oregon a lot. They're fun to watch. I watch Texas. And I know Texas was out their starting quarterback for a couple of games. I get that, too. But they had their starting quarterback against Oklahoma, and they lost. All right? They played great the last game against Texas Tech. They're going to have to be super convincing tomorrow, and then they're going to need some help. And the best thing for Texas is for Alabama to lose, Georgia, Michigan win, and then Oregon wins, and you need, well, it doesn't matter. Oregon, Washington don't matter. If Florida State, this is how Texas gets in. Alabama loses, Florida State loses, Texas wins. Then you don't have to worry about the argument against Oregon, do you?
No.
And if Washington wins, you don't have an argument anyway. So there is a scenario where Texas can get in, don't get me wrong. Because I think they jump Ohio State no matter what if they win, because Ohio State didn't play anybody this week. They're not in the conference title game. But when we sit here and we put all the money in one basket, and we sit here and Texas fans are hanging on to a win in September 9th, and Alabama fans are writing it off as it didn't count like an exhibition game. No, it counts. But you also need more than just that win if you're going up against another team that has one loss, who has virtually just as many quality wins. And so that's the thing. I look at quality wins. I'm looking at ranked teams. I'm looking at who Oregon beat and where they beat them. They won at Utah. All right. Texas's wins were home against K-State and KU, their other ranked wins. Those were home games.
Yeah.
Okay. Oregon went on the road and won by 29 Utah. Well, Utah had a backup quarterback. Well, Texas played a backup quarterback in Jason Bean. An hour before the game, Daniels messed up his back walking through the hotel room, for crying out loud. All right? So, and here's the thing. Oregon's going to end the year with wins, if they win, over 16-3. Texas is going to end beating a 6-6 team by 50 and a 3-loss Oklahoma State team. They'll have 4 losses if they win. Mm-hmm. The only path for Texas to get in this playoff, to me, is Florida State loses and Alabama loses. That's it. Because Georgia takes care of itself, Michigan takes care of itself, and then Washington, Oregon is still ahead of Texas no matter what, in my opinion. So then you got to take Florida State's spot.
Yeah.
That's the only scenario. Because Oregon loses to Washington, they have 2 losses, they're done. Ohio State doesn't play a game this week. They're done. Florida State loses. They're done. Texas ascends to 4. So that's the path for Texas. For Texas fans arguing about, well, we'll jump Oregon if we beat Oklahoma State and Oregon beats Washington, I think you are drinking the wrong type
of
Kool-Aid.
There's not a chance. Like,
how would you jump the team that's ahead of you and they just beat number three?
Yeah.
That's like, undefeated.
Even think that
there's no way Texas jumps
Texas
Oregon.
Texas jumps Oregon if they both win.
And how does Alabama jump Texas when Alabama lost by 10 at home to Texas? See, I think it's way more plausible Alabama's going to jump Texas than Texas has any chance of jumping Oregon. And so I've kind of made fun of Texas a little bit, but I'll defend them from the standpoint of head-to-head should be the ultimate tiebreaker. Yeah. Both teams have one loss. I don't care what week it was. They both have one loss. Well, Georgia has the best win. Alabama's the best win. They just beat number one Georgia. Great. Well, then maybe Texas would have beat Georgia too because they beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
So I think Alabama beats Georgia. They jump Texas. So Texas has got to really pull for Georgia, and they've got to pull for Louisville. And then they win. So there's a three-prong scenario, I think, for Texas to be in the playoff. Can it happen? Well, sure. I mean, absolutely. Georgia can definitely win. So then you're going to sit here and hope for Louisville to win. And could Louisville win? Yeah. They're the underdog. They're kind of playing with house money. Coming off a loss, sometimes that wakes you up. And Florida State's got a backup quarterback. So Texas definitely can get in. I'm not going to sit here and chalk up a win against Oklahoma State yet either.
No.
But the Big 12 is hurt. Even though they got the brand name Texas, they're hurt because Texas isn't playing a top 10 team. Beating Oklahoma State tomorrow doesn't really build a lot for Texas' resume, in my opinion, other than your conference champion. That's it.
100% it. I mean, their resume was built for them until they lost to Oklahoma, right? Like, it's like everything was right there. You beat Alabama by 10 on the road in Tuscaloosa. You're feeling good about it, and then now you lost to Oklahoma, and so that's where it changed for them. Like mm-hmm. they have a clear path to the playoff
yeah.
if they just beat their rival Oklahoma, right? And you know that's easy to say, and Oregon can probably say the same thing right now. If we had just beat Washington, we wouldn't have to worry about any jumping or anybody jumping us.
But you get a chance to knock them out. Yeah. That's ahead of you, so you'll be fine.
Yeah, and so they've got the opportunity that's right there. They don't have to worry about it as much as Texas. But and yeah, Alabama could say the same thing, right? Maybe we shouldn't have lost to Texas, and we'd be in a different spot right now. So yeah, everybody's got these things that they can say about their resume and things like that. But those things are built, and I fully believe that the whole resume should count. Like they talk about that so much in the college basketball tournament, right? Like, I want to see your full body of work. Well, you know, that counts if you're an at-large team, but it doesn't count if you're a conference champion. But point being, like, body of work should count and resume should count. And it's absurd to me that Alabama could jump Texas when they lost by 10 at home to Texas.
I agree.
And so there's a lot of things that I don't like about this system. That's obviously one of them.
Last year of this system.
Yeah, and I'm glad about that, obviously. And, you know, you can see it all coming to fruition. Like I said the other day, if everybody just wins, then it's a perfect ending to the season. You have four 13-0 teams playing in the playoff. But I don't think anybody thinks that's going to happen. So, there's a situation, a chance for chaos here, but I'm not going to feel bad for Texas, and I'm also not going to argue that the Big 12 schedule that Texas played was just so tough that they should be benefiting because of strength of schedule, because I don't see it.
Okay,
other than the Alabama win, which is not a conference win.
And I don't know how you want to determine what a quality win is. That's my thing. It's like a moving goalpost. But Texas, they beat four ranked teams, or if you want to sit about who's ranked now, Texas has Alabama and Oklahoma. No, they lost, so that'll count. So Texas right now, if you want to talk about teams that are in the top 25 in college football playoff rankings, Texas only has two wins.
Yeah.
That's Alabama and K-State at number 25.
At 25, yeah.
That's it, okay? That's all they got. Oregon, meanwhile, has three wins over Utah. I don't know where they're ranked right now. Maybe they fell out. If they fell out,
I think they're still in.
Are they still in? Might double check that.
Yeah.
Check that for me. They do have Oregon State and Washington. They didn't beat Washington. They beat Colorado, but they're not in the top 25 anymore. So if you want to go by the current rankings, Texas has two wins, and it looks like Oregon has two, as long as Utah's in the top 25. Okay. So then if you compare the two, clearly Texas win over Alabama is more impressive than any win that Oregon has had so far.
Actually, Utah did drop out of the
college football. Okay, so then that means that if you go off of the current rankings, Oregon only has one win against a current top 25 team. Texas has two, barely, because K-State's 25. So that you talk about, there's not much difference. Alabama, meanwhile, keep your rankings there. Yep. So I know Ole Miss is still in the rankings. I know A&M isn't anymore. Mississippi State isn't anymore. Arkansas isn't. Tennessee's still ranked, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay, LSU's ranked.
Yep.
And Auburn is not. So Alabama has three wins against top 25 teams currently. Texas has two, Oregon has one, and Texas barely has two. But they have the best win of all of them, and that's at Alabama. Okay? So if you're going to compare those three teams that have one loss, who is most deserving of being in the playoff today? And everybody's going to say Alabama. And Texas says, well, our head-to-head trumps that. Okay, great. And Oregon says, well, if we beat Washington, there should be no argument. We're already rated ahead of you anyway. So we got to let it play out. But my belief is this. I believe Texas is in a bad spot. Unless the three-pronged scenario happens, then they're in a great spot. If Georgia wins and Florida State loses and Texas wins, then Texas is in a great position. They'll move up to four. They'll be in the playoff, and they'll play Georgia in the first round of the playoffs, more than likely. But in regards to Oregon will gain if they win. So Texas ain't going to catch Oregon. And Alabama's going to gain a ton by beating Georgia, which will probably trump the win head-to-head, I think. I think it's unfair. I don't think it should happen, but I think it will happen. And Texas will be on the outside looking in. And you can make arguments Texas has the best win out of all those schools except for Alabama if Bama beats Georgia.
Yeah.
So it's like if Bama beats number one Georgia, that erases their loss to Texas. That's what it seems to be. So that also, once again, presents the idea that Alabama, is it Texas's fault they don't have this golden opportunity at the end of the year? It's the conference's fault.
Yeah.
It's not Texas's fault. You know, Oregon and Washington ain't always every year the Pac-12 has two teams in the top five. So sometimes Oregon has to play a team that is lower rated, and then they get beat by Utah or Utah-USC the last couple of years, right? Utah is usually lower seed, lower ranked team, and they beat them. But this year works out great for the Pac-12, and then they won't exist anymore after this year. And Texas, the Big 12 has hurt Texas this year. And so they say, hey, that's why we're leaving this conference, which I get. Of course, next year you probably will have more than one loss playing SEC schedule, in my opinion. But maybe not. SEC is top heavy, but is it really that great lower? And by the way, I did miss one here. Or no, I didn't miss it. Alabama didn't play Missouri. You know, and then by the way, I want to pull this up real quick since we're talking about it. I'm going to pull up Georgia's schedule for fun and giggles, because what happens if Georgia loses?
Yeah, I looked at all that, too. They've got 3-2.
They got 3-2 against top 25 teams.
Yeah. And except for Alabama, they've beaten the two other best teams in the SEC based on rankings.
They beat Missouri
and Ole Miss.
Yeah, Missouri, and they beat Ole Miss. They destroyed Ole Miss.
Dominated Ole Miss.
And they beat Tennessee really good. Yeah. So they beat three straight ranked teams. So that's where Georgia will have a leg up.
And
by the way, if Georgia loses here, by the way, let me ask this question. If Alabama beats Georgia, does Georgia have a chance to be ahead of Texas still? Which would be stupid, because Alabama beat Georgia, but Texas beat Alabama. Well, how can Georgia be ahead of Texas?
They will be. I don't know how they can, but they will be. That's what I'm saying. This system is at the point where it's messed up, and everybody knows. They can sit here and say that it's not there, but everybody knows there's a bias to the SEC.
No question.
It's right there in front of you. You're going to look at it, and you're going to be like, well, Alabama's in. How is this committee going to keep out the two-time defending? If they lose by like a field goal to Alabama,
or close,
they're going to keep the two-time defending national champion that lost by single digits to Alabama and has it. They're going to figure out a way to keep them in the playoff. I really feel like if Georgia loses.
Well, how can you keep
how
Georgia out when they've been number one or two all year, undefeated, lose to the eighth ranked team in the country, Alabama, and that'll be their first loss in 30 games.
Oh, yeah. So
29 game winning streak.
And it's like,
there's no way Georgia falls behind Texas.
For the business of the playoff, it doesn't make sense for them to leave Georgia out. It's crazy the way that they'll probably justify it and keep them in, whatever happens there. In that scenario, Texas should be ahead of both of them. I completely 100% agree, because they all have one loss, and Texas, it's the Oklahoma State thing that we were talking about,
right,
with the tiebreaker in the Big 12, right? It's like, yeah, Oklahoma State didn't play. Oklahoma State beat both of those teams. Oklahoma didn't play K-State, but right. It's like, Yeah, but still, this is...
They beat both head-to-head.
This is a head-to-head, and if I beat this team and this team beat that team, then that, in theory, should be better than the team that yeah. lost in Georgia, since I beat Alabama, who beat Georgia.
But here's a scenario we haven't even talked about yet today on the show, is Georgia lose Alabama, Michigan wins, Washington wins, Florida State wins. That's three undefeated teams, and then you got one loss Georgia, one loss Alabama, one loss Texas. That's three teams for one spot. Yeah. You know there's going to be SEC school takes the fourth spot, so Texas is screwed. But which one is it? It has to be. Doesn't have to be Alabama.
Got
to
be Alabama.
But here's my question.
Georgia.
But here's my question. Don't you think? And Nick Saban's already set it up yesterday. This is how the SEC does their politics. They're already talking before the game even happens. Nick Saban says it would be complete disrespect to the SEC if we beat Georgia and neither one of us is in the playoff. I mean, we've won how many national championships over the last 9 years? How we can't have anybody in a 14 playoff? That would just be disrespectful. That's what Saban already threw that out there today, because he's good at playing the politics game. He does. And you know what? There's some substance there, no doubt. But think about this for a second. If Alabama beats Georgia, they both have one loss, right? Michigan wins, they expected to win, they're undefeated. Washington wins, they're undefeated, and beat Oregon twice. So they're both in. There's no doubt they're both in.
Yeah.
Florida State wins, they're undefeated. See the scenario that I'm building here? Texas is out no matter what, in my opinion. So now you're sitting here, or Texas in the conversation, and you're arguing Georgia, Texas, Alabama, all with one loss versus an undefeated Florida State team with a backup quarterback. I think this is where we're headed with this. And I think everybody knows that all those three teams with one loss are better than Florida State right now. But Florida State is undefeated. Is the committee going to keep Florida State out so that Georgia can stay in with a loss to Alabama? Are they going to put Texas in because Florida State won a close game against Louisville but still went undefeated, but Texas beat Alabama head-to-head? You know, are you going to put Alabama in over Florida State? Florida State won the conference title. Well, so did Alabama. But Alabama has a loss, okay? But Florida State ahead of Alabama? Yeah, how would you even seed it? Would it be Oklahoma? Would it be Michigan 2-1? Probably.
Yeah.
Washington 2. And then number 3 is probably the SEC, Alabama, probably, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then 4 would be an argument between Florida State and Georgia. And Florida State's conference champion, Georgia is not. Florida State hadn't lost a game all year. Georgia's lost one in the last 30. You talk about a tough decision for the committee. That's the worst case scenario for the committee is Alabama winning. I mean, seriously, this whole thing hinges on Alabama winning. If Georgia wins, a lot of this gets cleared up.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, of course, you have the crazy upsets with Michigan somehow losing, and then Ohio State comes back in saying, okay, maybe we should be considered. Texas wins. They say, okay, we should obviously be up there even ahead of Michigan with one loss, because Michigan has a horrible loss to Iowa, right? Even though Iowa's ranked 16th. So there's a lot of moving parts, but to me, the first domino to fall tonight, I think people just talk about this to talk about it, just to fill time. Washington, Oregon, the winner's in. There's no doubt in my mind the winner's in. And I'm assuming Michigan's going to win. So those two slots are gone. So now it comes down to Georgia wins, Alabama's out, cleans up the picture easily. Then Florida State wins, they're in. If they lose, Texas wins, Texas is in. Simple as that. If Texas and Florida State both lose and Alabama loses, now the door's open for guess who? The school that has 9 lives when it comes to the college football playoff, Ohio State, could be back in the conversation without even playing this weekend. So, but really, I don't know if Texas gains much other than they win, so the conference champion, they end with just one loss. They don't get a ton of credit by beating an 18th ranked Oklahoma State team with 3 losses. They got blown out twice. Their only way they get rewarded is they just simply win, and then stuff falls around them to where they get in. But Alabama is the linchpin to all of this. Alabama can cause mass chaos and tons of arguments and people hating on each other and conference hate towards everybody, because if Alabama wins, trust me, this is the scenario you're going to have. Alabama's in. They have to be. They're SEC champion. They have to be, right? Michigan's in. Well, obviously, they're undefeated. Well, Washington's in. Obviously, they beat Oregon twice. Well, Florida State should be punished because of something they couldn't control, and that's their quarterback getting hurt. And thus, they'll say, I don't care if Florida State's 13-0, but they just beat Florida from the SEC, by the way, in a rivalry game by 9. Yeah. with a backup quarterback, and they just beat number 14 Louisville with a backup quarterback. You're going to punish Florida State because they have a backup quarterback. But you're not going to punish Texas for their win against Kansas because Kansas had a backup quarterback? I mean, it's so funny, the goalposts, how they move. But that's the scenario you're going to have. If Alabama wins, I think you automatically are going to hear, even before the ACC title game begins, you're already going to hear it. If Alabama beats Georgia, and you're going to hear it by Gary Danielson, trust me, because odds are it won't be a blowout. Alabama beats Georgia, Gary Danielson and the cronies will be saying, well, I know Alabama beat Georgia, but Georgia's not lost a game in 30 times. Georgia's a two-time defending champion. They should be able to defend their title. They only have one loss. Everybody's entitled to a bad day. Georgia and Alabama have to be in. Well, then guess what? Michigan and Washington both win. You're saying Florida State doesn't deserve to be in, and they're 13-0 and won their conference title, and Georgia didn't win their conference title. That's going to be the massive argument if Alabama wins. I think it's a bigger argument. Notice I've left Texas out of this conversation here for the last 30 seconds. The biggest argument isn't going to be Alabama over Texas. The biggest argument is going to be Alabama over undefeated Florida State. And really, I don't know if it even truly matters if Oregon or Washington win. Like I said, I think the winner of that is in. Michigan's in with a win. Those two slots are locked up. If Alabama beats Georgia, now all of a sudden you get to the argument a non-SEC champion should be in over an undefeated ACC champ. That will be the argument. Because I think Alabama winning the SEC will trump their loss to Texas. That's just my opinion.
I agree with it. I mean, I don't agree with the comment.
Yeah, right.
And the situation.
All right. So at the end of the day, who's going to be in the playoff come Sunday?
What did I? I'm going to say.
You think it's going to be fairly clear?
I think Georgia's going to win. So I'm going to go Georgia, Michigan, obviously, Oregon, since I picked them, and then who's that leave?
I didn't pay attention.
Texas. No, not Texas.
Oh, have you got Oregon, Washington?
Florida State, because I think Florida State's going to win. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my prediction. I'm going to go crazy a little bit here. I'm going to say Alabama beats Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Every streak must come to an end. They're due to lose one. I say Alabama, it wins, and they're going to be in no matter the fact they lost to Texas. That win over number one Georgia will make everybody forget about the win over loss to Texas by 10 early in the year.
It will.
Forget it. So Alabama wins, they're in. Michigan wins, they're in. Oregon, Washington winner is in. And Georgia's going to be selected to be in over Florida State because of the conference they play in, despite being 13-0, because I'm predicting Florida State to win as well. And they're going to be punished because it's their backup quarterback. That's what I think is going to happen. Now, there are some people say they don't think the committee has the guts to keep an undefeated conference champion out of 14 playoff. I think they do. If it's Georgia versus Florida State, now I can see, you know, and Alabama's got... If it was a matter of, at the end of the day, everything was equal, if Alabama was going up against Florida State in an argument right now, and Alabama had one loss, but that wouldn't be the case because they would be right where Georgia is.
I'm talking if the roles were reversed and Florida State was the one loss team and Alabama was undefeated.
Oh, it's a no-brainer.
There's no question. Alabama or Georgia would be undefeated. They're getting that spot.
Right. Well,
there's
no question. Top two in the country.
Yeah, it'd be one or two. Yeah. So it's like there's no thought process of that the ACC champion's going to be better than a one-loss SEC runner-up.
So here's my prediction. I predict that the college football playoff rankings will go like this. I'm going to say one will be Michigan. I'm going to say two is going to be Oregon.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say three is going to be Alabama, and four is going to be Georgia. And then I'll go even further for extra credit. Number five is going to be Florida State, and Texas will only move up one spot to number six. Mm-hmm. They won't even be right behind Alabama. They'll be like, well, let's compromise. Oh, okay, we have Florida State ahead of Texas, but we got them behind Alabama and Georgia. Yeah, but this still means they're not in the top four. So if you're not top four, it don't matter if you're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, or whatever. But that's my prediction. I've got Michigan 1, Oregon 2. Guess what? If you have Alabama at 3 and Georgia at 4, they don't play each other in a rematch.
Yeah, and they're not going to do
so
that.
So that's set up perfectly as well. That's set up perfectly for the committee.
Yeah.
If Alabama wins this game.
Same reason they didn't play Michigan, Ohio State for the second time last year. Right?
Or what you do is you move Alabama to 2 ahead of Oregon. So then Oregon will be 3. So you got Alabama, Oregon, and then you'd have Georgia versus Michigan. Okay? And that would probably
so either way,
maybe either way, it'd be the same matchups. Yeah. Probably you just flip 2 and 3, and that don't matter.
I mean, there's no scenario where in that scenario where Michigan's not the number one team, and then after that it's Michigan, now, Georgia, Bama.
Now think about that scenario for one more second, and then we'll move on. If the scenario I just presented happens, the only undefeated team that's in the playoff would be Michigan. Because Oregon would have one loss, Alabama would have one loss, Georgia would have one loss, and the only other undefeated team in college football would be at number 5 in my prediction. Isn't that messed? Wouldn't that be messed up?
Absolutely.
And that's where some people say the committee won't have the kahunas to do it. They will keep Georgia out somehow. They'll keep Georgia out because they don't want to say, well, we just won all our games in a major Power 5 conference, and we're still not in the playoff. What else could we have possibly done? So there'll be a lot of political pressure from that standpoint.
Yeah.
And I understand your argument both ways. Now, if we're using the eye test and we say truly who the four best teams are, I would say it is Michigan, it is Oregon, even though Washington beat them. I think they'll avenge that. I'd say Michigan, Oregon. If Alabama beats Georgia, you got to put Alabama as the top four. And then I would have Georgia. That would be the four I'd go with. I would.
Yeah, it's
based on the eye test. Now, if Georgia gets blown out by Alabama, maybe I change my mind. Maybe maybe I put Texas in above Florida State. That'd be my own personal poll.
Yeah.
But it's I'm with Parker. Parker and I were messaging back and forth a little bit. I'm with Parker. I want to see chaos. I do. I kind of do. The thing is, I feel bad for Florida State if they're somehow jobbed out of this deal.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Do you think the committee has the guts to do it?
The wild card is the injured quarterback, because I don't know.
They've never had the deal with
I don't
with
know
that.
If this college football playoff committee is like the NCAA tournament committee, because
they
punished
Cincinnati and Kenyon Martin.
Effect.
They punished Cincinnati one year.
Yeah, and they always do that. Mm-hmm. If there's a key player injured that's not going to play in the tournament, they lose like a seed.
Yeah.
And maybe two. They'll drop them a number on that seed because they know that this isn't the team that won all these games coming into this tournament. And they take that into effect and factor it in when they're seeding the NCAA men's basketball tournament.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if the college football playoff committee is going to do the same type of deal, but
if they do, that would be their excuse.
Yeah, that's the easy excuse.
Be the cop
it's
out.
Like, well, this isn't the Florida State team that won all these games. They don't have their starting quarterback.
But they come back and say, but we just beat a team from the SEC in a rivalry game, and we just beat a top 15 team on a neutral field with our backup quarterback.
I was like, if Florida State goes out and beats Louisville by 4 touchdowns, it's going to be hard to be like, yeah, you're not in.
Well, to me, I think it's hard if Florida State wins no matter what.
It is hard no matter what. It's going to be real hard if they go out and blow out Louisville
with a backup
and decide to put Georgia in ahead of them.
Yeah.
And so, but there's all kinds of stuff that could happen there. But I am not convinced that Georgia's out of this thing with a loss at all.
I'm not either.
No matter how they have to get them in.
Agreed.
And it may be get them in above Oregon. I don't know. Oregon's going to have a quality win, obviously, if they win. But
I mean, we haven't talked about that scenario. Would Georgia and Alabama be in above Oregon, and then Florida State takes the 4 and Oregon State? How in the world could Oregon stay in the 5 spot after beating the number 3 team in the country?
Yeah.
I mean, the committee has all kinds of problems out. The committee has all kinds of problems to explain if Alabama wins. They're going to have to sit here and explain how a team that's won 29 of the last 30 and two-time champion who had just one loss in a conference title game isn't one of the top 4 teams in the country. They'd have to argue how Oregon was at 5, just beat number 3, but we're not putting them in because they have one loss, because we think Georgia's better. They'd have to argue and support we'd kept out 13-0 Florida State, who won 2 straight games with a backup quarterback, including a conference title game. There are all kinds of problems for the committee, and it all is based on one game.
Yeah.
If Alabama beats Georgia, those questions very well pop up. Now, what makes it easy for the committee would be Alabama wins, Florida State loses.
Oh yeah,
now that solves it.
Yeah,
because now you got you've got Washington, Oregon winner, you've got Michigan, you got Alabama, and you can easily argue, I mean, you could argue Georgia and Alabama both ahead of Texas. Now, Texas would come back at you and say, we beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa. You beat Georgia. You're getting rewarded for you beating Georgia. Why don't we get rewarded for beating Alabama? So shouldn't we be in? We're conference champion and Georgia is not. That would be the next argument to fall.
Then
the committee have to explain, why doesn't head-to-head matter?
Yeah, for me and all that, if you look at body of work and where everybody's at, then it should be Michigan, it should be Oregon or Washington, whoever wins that game. Oregon will say in this scenario because we picked them to win.
SEC champ.
So it'd be Oregon, and then it would be, yeah, it'd be the SEC champ. Or actually, it'd be Florida State, maybe, if they're undefeated in Texas.
Right.
No SEC team.
Well, and that's
what, not going to happen.
That's what Nick Saban's arguing yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, you can't keep us out. We're disrespecting.
It's not going to happen.
No.
But what I'm saying is, if you just go body of work and look at what's going on right now and things of that nature,
you could argue they both don't
get it. Put it all together.
You could.
Texas should be above both of them. Florida State's undefeated.
You're right.
And Oregon and Washington, that's a quality win there, whoever wins that. And then obviously Michigan's undefeated at the top. And I mean, it sounds absurd to say that no SEC team should be in this, because I think everybody knows that Georgia right now is definitely in the top four because they haven't lost. But if Alabama wins, then that changes the perception of who they are. So it's all crazy.
Let's make it a little cleaner. Alabama beats Georgia, but Michigan wins, and Washington wins, and Florida State wins. Okay, so you've got Michigan at one, and Texas wins. So Michigan is one. They're undefeated.
Yeah.
Number two is Washington. Mm-hmm. They're undefeated. Number three is Florida State. They're undefeated. And then you come down to arguing between Georgia, Alabama, and Texas. And Texas, like, we beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa by 10 points.
Yeah.
And we are conference champions. So, you know, Georgia can get out of that argument because they didn't win their conference. But then it comes down to, so that kind of breaks a three-way tiebreaker, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, that's a tiebreaker. So if the committee sits here and says, we value conference championships, Georgia, I'm sorry, I know you won 29 in a row, but we got three undefeated teams, 1, 2, and 3. Undefeated won their conference, so that's easy. Big 10, Pac-12, ACC. Boom, they're locked in. So we're going to give the fourth spot to a conference champion. So that eliminates Georgia. Now you've isolated two teams, Alabama versus Texas. And you know who I think is going to get it. But it should be Texas. If they eliminate Georgia from that equation, then it should be Texas. Even though Alabama beat number one Georgia, and Texas beat number 18 Oklahoma State, and you can hear the SEC people just crying a river, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
But Texas beat them head-to-head. If the roles are reversed, Alabama be arguing, well, this is not fair. We beat them head-to-head in Austin. So there is a scenario there the SEC would be out. And Nick Saban, to his credit, because I think most people in the country, including you and me, think there's no way the SEC champion is left out of the playoff. Nick Saban isn't assuming anything, and that is brilliant on his part. As much as we hate Nick Saban politicking for Alabama and the SEC, he's brilliant in what he's doing. He's being proactive. He's playing ahead of the curve. Now, I think he might be giving a little bit of bulletin board material to Georgia, but like, oh, we're basically saying we're going to win. But he's also respecting Georgia by saying, I think Georgia would still have a chance to be in, and we could have both. But he's very smart in getting it out there so the media looks at this and puts some pressure on the committee saying, listen, the SEC is the best conference in America. Everybody knows that. Has been, because we've won all these national championships, including last two with Georgia. How in the world are you going to keep an SEC champion out of the playoff and no SEC team in the Final Four? He's built the foundation with his comments yesterday, and they're brilliant comments.
Oh, yeah.
It's smart as hell what he's doing. And that lends to me thinking even more confidently, there's no way the SEC champion is out of the equation.
No.
No, it's not going to happen. Way.
Whether we think it's crazy or not.
Right.
There's going to be an SEC team in the top four.
Absolutely. There might be two.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to be fun. Maybe. If all the favorites win, it won't be. It'll be pretty boring. It'll be pretty boring. I mean, the committee's got to be sitting there, I think. The committee's got to be sitting there going, you know what, guys?
Everybody win.
Just all the undefeated teams win. And then and that takes care of it.
We just handed this to you on a silver platter.
I mean, it'd be simple.
4-13-0 teams.
It'd be simple. That's what they're probably hoping for.
Oh, absolutely.
I guarantee
you. I would be hoping for that if I was on the committee.
Trust me, there are people on that committee that are already working up how to explain what already know they think they want to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me. All right, there was NFL football last night. The Seahawks and the Cowboys, it was a really, really good game.
Comes to the slot. Here comes Parsons. And he forces the pass. incomplete, and that will wrap it up.
Pretty amazing game last night. High-scoring affair. Welcome back. Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Cowboys beat the Seahawks. First win for the Cowboys against a team with a winning record. So, Miami, you're on the clock. Cowboys beat the Seahawks 41-35. Seattle, a big-time loss because they're now 6-6 and have to play San Fran and Philly the next 2 weeks. Good luck with that. And my youngest is a big Seahawks fan. I had Seahawks as my sleeper pick to make the Super Bowl, so this is not looking good. I was cheering for the Cowboys last night. Sorry, Cowboy fans. I was cheering for the Seahawks. Seahawks led 35-27. Geno Smith played pretty well. DK Metcalf had 3 touchdowns, had a big night. But at the end of the day, Cowboys came back and they won it. What's amazing about this game is, okay, well, one, the Cowboys beat a team with a winning record. That's amazing. Cowboys are 9-3. Seahawks are 6-6 and probably cooked. The Seahawks are the first team in NFL history, to lose a game with 35 or more points and not punt once. They're the first team to ever do that.
Yikes.
This was the sixth game in NFL history where neither team punted, including the playoffs. There were 257 penalty yards last night between the teams combined, the most since 2021. That's not good. So, some nuggets from that game last night. Cowboys are 9-3. The 8-3 Kansas City Chiefs are on the road facing the 5-6 Packers Sunday night. Z96.3 Lake. You can listen to it pregame at 6 o'clock, kickoff at 7:20. The Packers kind of saved their season with a big win on Thanksgiving Day, so they've had some extra rest and preparation time for the Chiefs, who have to travel to Lambeau. Of course, we've always wanted to see Aaron Rodgers with Patrick Mahomes. Well, that's never happened because of weird situations. COVID, dislocated kneecaps, whatever else. And so last time the Chiefs played the Packers, Jordan Love made his first career start, and it wasn't pretty for Love. Chiefs won. Kind of a low-scoring game. Chiefs did enough offensively. Weren't great offensively. Go to Lambeau. Packers, Jordan Love's playing, you know, pretty well here the last couple of weeks. Maybe he's figuring some of the things out, as is the Packer offense, and Coach Reed has taken note.
For the challenge of playing the Packers, good football team, great environment for a football game. They've put together, obviously, over the years, a good offense. They brought their quarterback along, done a real nice job with that, and he's playing at a high level. So, along with the receivers and the rest of the bunch, obviously, the offensive line.
All right, who you got? Chiefs-Packers Sunday night. The offense looked better at Las Vegas, and I think some Chiefs are going to take a deep breath, and some are going to be ready to jump all over the Chiefs as soon as they drop a pass Sunday night. The Packers' defense isn't all that decent. Their running backs, A.J. Dillon's banged up, might not play. Aaron Jones has been hurt all year, I know, because he's on my fantasy team. He's done me nothing. Jordan Love is my quarterback this week because Josh Dobbs is on a bye. So I'm conflicted, but it doesn't really matter. I'm not conflicted now I think about it because I'm eliminated from playoff contention because my team is so god-awful in fantasy. So I don't even care if Jordan Love scores a well, I do care. I want Jordan Love to not score that many points, so be it, and I lose fantasy again. But if I was in the mix for the playoffs in our league, I'd be like, okay, Jordan Love, go get me 28 points, but Chiefs win 38-35, that type of thing. What do you think here? You think the Packers have a chance to beat the Chiefs? Do you think the Chiefs are vulnerable here?
I think when you go on the road in the NFL, there's always a chance that the team might, you know, step up and beat you. But this matchup, I actually kind of like it for the Chiefs. Still a young quarterback, right? And the way the defense has been playing this year, I think they can maybe get after him and do some good things there. And like you said, they're banged up a little bit on offense too. Maybe I'm just like false hope here, but I'm hoping last week's offensive performance is something that's going to kickstart them for the rest of the year and understand that, hey, we do have guys that can make plays on this team. If we obviously distribute it differently, let's not target Justin Watson 15 times, you know, those types of things. And if they do that, I think the Chiefs can win it by 10 or so. But I think the Packers have a chance, obviously. I'm not writing them off at all.
Well, the Chiefs have a chance, obviously.
No, I said the Packers.
Packers, okay, yeah. I got the Chiefs winning. If the defense keeps playing like they have been, Packers running backs are banged up, and then you put a lot on Jordan Love. The Packer receivers, they have decent receivers, nothing super special. They don't have Devontae Adams anymore. But it's at Lambeau. It's going to be a primetime game Sunday night. Place is going to be buzzing. There's going to be a lot of Chiefs fans making the trip up there. I got some friends that are going up there. I'm jealous. I'd love to be there. It's on my bucket list to go to Lambeau. My plan all along, next time Chiefs in Lambeau, I was going to go, but it just doesn't work. So I'm with you. I think the Chiefs will win. And if they do, they'll be the number one seed after this weekend because the Ravens have a bye and the Chiefs have the tiebreaker versus the Dolphins, the Jags head-to-head, and they have the conference tiebreaker against the Ravens, and everything is back in order like it's supposed to be.
Yeah, if you're worried about those things, then get that win.
There you go. NFL schedule. Chargers are at the Patriots. That's funny. Lions are at the Saints. Lions are 8-3, trying to bounce back. The Saints are tied atop the division at 5-6. The Falcons lead the division due to a tiebreaker head-to-head win against Saints. They are 5-6 at the Jets, 4-7. You see Aaron Rodgers' 21-day window has been open for him to come back and play possibly.
I did.
Isn't that just dumb? Like, the Jets aren't going anywhere. What's the point of Aaron Rodgers coming back other than to be selfish and say, I proved I have this new technology and I'm a superhuman being and I'm going to play at the end of the year. Now, I will say he's a super competitive guy and you do love the fact he has this will to want to get back on the field and play with his teammates. But if the season is done and the Jets are eliminated, what's the point of him coming back to risk anything and rush things? Go ahead and take your extra time and be ready to go for next training camp. But I think this is a more of about Aaron Rodgers wanting to show the world that I'm smarter about medicine, science, or whatever else it might be. I think that's what this ends up being. The Cardinals 2-10 at the Steelers 7-4. The Colts are 6-5 at the Titans 4-7. Dolphins 8-3 at the Commanders. So another easy win for the Dolphins. Broncos at the Texans is one of the intriguing games of the week. They're both 6-5. Broncos won 5 in a row. They're due to lose one. Panthers are at the Buccaneers. Buccaneers are 4-7, only a game out of first. Just like when Tom Brady was a quarterback last year. The Browns at the Rams. Rams are coming on. Browns are going to have Joe Flacco maybe as their quarterback, who they just picked up. Former Raven. And yet, there's no spot for Colin Kaepernick or other guys, but Joe Flacco can keep coming out there. I'm not sitting here saying that Kaepernick's better than Flacco right now. I have no idea. Kaepernick hasn't played in so long.
Yeah.
But there are other guys out there I think are more talented than Joe Flacco that aren't getting chances. And whether you want to say Kaepernick or other guys, that's fine. You don't even have to mention Kaepernick. You can mention many others. I know Kaepernick's been out of the league for a while. That's fair. If you want to say you should bring up other names before him, that's fine. Just the name that popped in my head. Joe Flacco is maybe going to be the quarterback for the Browns tomorrow. That's the point. The best game of the weekend, no doubt, is probably the NFC Championship game preview. It's the Niners at the Eagles. I think the Niners win as long as they stay healthy in this game. The Eagles have been skirting by week in and week out, finding ways to win. And the Niners, it'd be a payback, just like the Eagles got payback on the Chiefs a little bit for losing the Super Bowl, beating the Chiefs in Arrowhead a few weeks ago. I think the Niners beat the Eagles. And if that's the case, now all of a sudden it tightens up with the number one seed in the NFC. Right now the Eagles have a two-game lead. If the Eagles win, and that's on at 3:25, that's not a primetime game. It's 3:25 on Fox. It's not a night game, whatever. Fox protect that game, and obviously we know why.
Yeah.
But if the Eagles win, you can pretty much give the number one seed to them. Although the Cowboys are on two games back, and they still got to play the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Chiefs at the Packers, 7:20, kickoff, 6 o'clock pregame, Z-Lanx 6.3 to Lake. And the Monday night game would have been good if Joe Burrow was playing. Bengals 5-6 at the Jaguars, are 8-3. And now, believe it or not, I've changed my tone, and I've changed my stripes, and I'm cheering for the Bengals to win.
A little different.
They're not a threat without Joe Burrow, in my opinion.
Not at all.
Now, by the way, for the first time in NFL history, the NFL has flexed a Monday night football game, and it involves the Kansas City Chiefs. Can you imagine, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, a Chiefs-Patriots Monday night game being bumped to Sunday at noon?
No.
But that's the case. The league has taken the Chiefs-Patriots matchup off of Monday night football, and they've replaced it with the Eagles road game against the Seahawks. So, the Chiefs matchup with the Patriots has been moved to Sunday, December 17th at noon. Okay? That's up in New England. The Eagles will now have three consecutive standalone games, starting with their Week 14 matchup in Dallas Sunday night. Then they face the Seahawks on a Monday in Seattle. And then they host the Giants on Christmas Day. By the way, the Chiefs have, I think they said now, there's a stretch of six straight games where the Chiefs have less rest than their opponent. That's not ideal. The Eagles now have a weird schedule. I guess that's the punishment for being good, apparently.
Yeah.
The NFL has also created a triple header of games for Saturday, December 16th. The Vikings-Bengals will now be at noon that day. Steelers-Colts will be at 3:30. And then Broncos at Lions, because the Broncos, we can't get enough of Russell Wilson, will be at 7:15. Broncos at the Lions on Saturday, December 16th. And finally in sports, we end with, well, what we can say is the losing segment of the show. The Detroit Pistons have lost 16 straight games. They started year 2-1. They won their last game on October 28th. Do you notice today is the first day of December? Why is that noteworthy? Because the Detroit Pistons, an NBA professional franchise, just went the entire month of November without winning a single bleeping game. That's right. An NBA team, guys paid millions of dollars, just went out and lost every single one of their games in the month of November, which was 15. The last team to go winless for an entire month in the NBA, the 76ers back in 2014. So congratulations, Detroit.
That was when they were on a full-on tank.
Yeah. Thank God the Lions are good.
No kidding.
Oh, Lions are usually horrible. Detroit fans would have nothing to celebrate. So thankfully, they have an NFL team that's doing pretty good, although they laid an egg on Thanksgiving or was a big fat turkey. Mm-hmm. But the Pistons didn't win a game the entire month of November. So if you think your Spurs are having a bad year, which they are, could be worse. You could go a whole month without losing or winning a game, although maybe the month of November, December will be your month for the Spurs to not win a game during the whole month.
Well, that's gonna be rough. I don't want them to be 3-29. So let's not do that, please.
You don't want that, huh? All right, high school basketball tonight.
Yeah, Beloit hosting Concordia on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. Online video stream of the Beloit Trojan channel at ncksports.com. I have girls pregame coverage at 5:50 and tip-off at 6 o'clock. And the boys game will follow here this evening. ncksports.com, your home for all the schedules here in North Central Kansas.
Fantastic. Have a great Friday. Enjoy the weekend of football, and hopefully you can go out and see some wrestling or high school basketball as the winter sports season has begun.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.